The 11th gateway, awaken your heart. Love is life's great secret. It transcends fear and isolation, guiding you beyond the shallows of sentiment to the shores of boundless being. Love endures not from words or feelings alone, but from actions that carry you beyond the interests of the separate self, beyond reason or motive, to embrace all people, things, and circumstance. Loving kindness begins in little ways, in moments of insight and humility, in your soul's longing for love's communion, which waits just on the other side of your heart's doorway. You are not here to contact your higher self. You are here to become it. We now enter together the 11th gateway titled Awaken Your Heart. Wouldn't the world be an even greater place if the power of love replaced the love of power? Let me ask you a few questions about love. Would you rather love or be loved? Think of five people you have loved in your life. Can you rank these five people in your depth or degree of loving? Why or why not? Can you be angry with someone and love them at the same time? If there were no sex in the world, who would you love and how might you demonstrate that love? Does this gateway interest you more or less than the others? Why? When's the last time you told someone you love them? When's the last time you acted with loving kindness? What would your life be like if you loved everyone you met? The clerk at the market, the bus driver or bank teller, male or female, young or old. What would that be like? Is there a difference between love and kindness? What might you do today to bring more love into the world? We talk about love a lot. There are novels and poetry. We often mistake sentiment for love. You'll turn on a talk show and you'll see lots of sentiment. People in their lower chakras in sentiment, crying, and everyone goes, ah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Sentiment is one of the domains of our lives. But we mistake it for love and kindness. I know some people who are very sentimental, but not very loving. We talk about love, we write about it, but how much do we actually practice it? Many people might imagine the idea of awakening the heart as somehow finding a way to just love all the time. Do you love all the time? I know I don't. You remember, we cannot control feelings. We can't fall in love or just love because we say, I'm going to love now. But there are things you can do to influence your feelings. What I want to begin with now is to give you some mystical practices you can do anytime to start to become more aware of your heart center. Very powerful, underground spiritual practice. Nobody knows you're doing it except you. And it's quite pleasurable and quite simple. You don't have to practice. You can do it right now as soon as I tell you what it is. And it's a way to spiritualize your senses. You can actually learn to heal other people emotionally and heal yourself. with your voice, thoughts, touch, sight, hearing. And the secret to it is to connect up your voice, first of all, with your heart. Now, I want there to be no misunderstanding. This is very practical and simple. Can you become aware of your body for a moment? Your attention may have been in your thoughts or something else. Can you be aware of your whole body? From your head down to your feet? Just aware of it. Okay, nothing strange or difficult. Can you be more aware? Can you put your attention especially in your ears? Just be aware of your ears. How about your knees? Is that a little easier? Most people can wiggle their knees easier than their ears. How about your shoulders? Put your awareness in your shoulders. Now put your attention in your heart. In the same way you put your attention in your shoulders, knees, or anywhere else, just become aware of that place approximately in the center of your chest. You may notice something. Objectively putting your attention in your heart has a different quality than when you put your attention in your knees or your ears. Hopefully you notice this. You don't have to generate sentiment or try to do anything. Just putting your attention in your awareness in your heart has a different quality about it. Now, how do you connect your heart to your voice? Very simply this. First, understand that if you put two guitars next to one another and you pluck the E string on one of the guitars, it starts to make a tune and vibrate. What's going to happen to the E string and the guitar next to it? It's also going to start to vibrate all by itself. Sympathetic or harmonic resonance. And it works the same with a human voice. When you speak from your mind, it resonates the mind of the other person. When you speak from your heart, in other words, when your attention is in your heart as you speak, it resonates the heart of the other person. It's pretty subtle. They're not going to suddenly go, oh, no. But it does resonate their heart. They won't know why. They feel something different. That subtle quality. Now, there's nothing wrong with speaking from the mind. If I'm saying to somebody, what's 16 minus 8? That's speaking from my mind. And it resonates the mind of the other person. Well, let me say 8, then it's 8. But you want to know when you're speaking from the heart. An example I often give. One night years ago, I was tucking my little daughters in when they were younger. And I felt so much love for them. And I realized I hadn't told my daughter Sierra that I loved her for a while. Hours. But she was asleep. I didn't want to wake her. So I reminded myself to tell her the next morning. So the next morning when I saw her, I remembered. I said, oh, Sierra, I love you. She said, thanks, Dad. I love you too. But she wasn't feeling it in the same way because I wasn't speaking from my heart. I was remembering to tell her. So nowadays, I don't have to tell her I love her all the time. I can just say, how was school today? But my awareness is in my heart as I speak to her, and it will resonate her heart. I don't have to go, how was your day today, darling? No. I can say, oh, that's a pretty dress you're wearing. Normal tone of voice, but my attention is in my heart as I speak. Anybody can do this. In fact, try it now. If you're with someone, put your attention in your heart as you speak. You're not flirting with the person. You're making a human-to-human connection of two human beings. It's transpersonal, not personal. Do you understand this? So it doesn't matter whether they're male, female. It's just humans making a connection from their heart. And what it does is the heart chakra, the heart center, is like a muscle that gets stronger with use. So it's a way to practice during the day, becoming more aware of your heart. And you start to relate to the world more from the heart. But, you know, there are times you can't, that anything you say is going to be wrong. Sometimes you can go to the bank and the teller is all, you know, upset about something. It's about to close. They're busy. And you just notice they have a nice scarf on and you just feel your heart and you say, hey, that's a very nice scarf you're wearing. They may go home feeling a little better and not know, even know why, that they feel better. It does perform a healing. One of the questions I asked you was, can you be angry at someone and feeling love at the same time? I suggest no. I suggest no. In a general, abstract sense, sure, you can love your spouse and be angry with them. But in the moment you're feeling angry, your attention is in the third chakra, the third center in your body, the solar plexus. It's not in the heart. By shifting your attention into the heart, in that moment, in the next moment, you're feeling love, or you're aware of love, and you've risen above fear, sorrow, and anger. Most human beings are struggling in the lower three centers, survival and fear, the sexual center related to sorrow and loss, and the solar plexus, the power center associated with anger. So anger is stronger than fear or sorrow. But the greatest leap any human being can make is from the lower three chakras up into the heart. And the higher chakras, I don't even talk about. The rest is an elevator ride. But that's the biggest jump. So practicing the heart, working with that, can be very, very powerful. You can uplift someone's day and they don't even know what you did. Just something, they feel a little bit better than they did before. But what if, as I said before, what if anything you say is going to be wrong? What if somebody's really upset with you? This happened to me. Again, it's a story I've told before, but you may not have heard it. One day I got home late. I promised I'd be home, and I got home an hour late. My wife was worried. She was concerned. I didn't call. I was at a bookstore spacing out. And I'd forgotten. This is the second night or third I'd been home late. And she had had an appointment and I'd forgotten about it. We only had one car. So she was justifiably quite upset with me. And she was really, letting me know about it. And in that moment, in that instance, I was able to rise above it. Sometimes I'm not, but in that instant I was. And I couldn't say to her, anything I said was going to be wrong. No excuses. She didn't want to hear any explanation. She wanted to express herself. But she was doing quite well. But what I did was I looked at her, I listened, I was receptive, and internally I said the words. I connected my attention in my heart to my words, and internally I said, I love you, I support you, God bless you. So I was standing there looking at her. Now, joy is quite intuitive. Some people would wind down when you do this. It just dissolves, Or they'd come back later and apologize. But she's very sensitive. And I was standing there listening to her, and I was just internally, I love you, I support you, God bless you. And she just stopped dead in her tracks, and she got this little smile on her face, and she said, what are you doing? But it was healed. Boom. I wasn't reacting back. She was a storm cloud. I wasn't. So there was no storm. I was just listening, hearing her. In fact, right now, there's somebody in your past, present or past, maybe an adversary, an ex-spouse, somebody was a problematic thing you need to heal. I'm going to ask you to picture them. And picture them if you can, and surround them with a kind of light. Imagine them, brightness around them. And while you picture that person, send them a message. Internally, something like the words, I love you, I support you, God bless you. But it's not the words, it's also putting your attention in your heart at the same time. Try that now. Okay, it doesn't take too long. It can be quite moving. Anything from just, well, it's nice, to quite moving. To the degree your attention is in your heart as you picture them and say words something like that. Don't be surprised if they're alive. If you get a message from them, a phone call, out of the blue or something. It doesn't always happen. but it happened to me. On some subtle level, they get this. And even if you don't believe that, even if they don't get the message, you get it. It can be hard having compassion for old adversaries. How many of you have a favorite person from your past who you really, really didn't like? That toxic person at work? That person who wouldn't let you sit at their table in middle school, junior high school? Maybe an ex-spouse or someone who betrayed you, someone who hurt you? We all have someone like that it's very difficult to feel compassion for. Imagine yourself right now in a serious argument with them, a fiery altercation, and they're acting the same way, and you're acting the same way you did. Imagine that for a moment. And in the next instant, they cry out in agony, clutch at their heart or their arm, fall to their knees and fall down. They just died at your feet. Now, I know a part of you may be going, yes. But do you know, seriously, that if that truly happened to you, you would feel a much greater degree of compassion for them than you had previously. Suddenly you see their humanity, their vulnerability. And you recognize, there goes the human being like me. Someone who suffered like me and will suffer and will lose loved ones. There's a schoolmate in planet Earth, one of my schoolmates. That can help to awaken the heart as well, and a sense of compassion. You don't have to feel love for the personality when you're saying, I love you, I support you, God bless you. Somebody cut me off going onto the highway some years ago. I remember this incident. I mean, he almost drove me off the road. I was scared and I was really angry. Then I remembered. And I looked at that person driving off and I just sent them the message. I felt my heart. I didn't have to feel love for that person. I couldn't control that. No way I could generate love, but I could put my attention in my heart and I could send that person a message, not their personality, which I wasn't too crazy about, but I could send that soul a message. I love you. I support you. God bless you on your journey. Drive carefully. And you think that person got the message? I don't know. Maybe they didn't at first. Maybe it just didn't get in. Maybe they had to go home, grab their beer, put their feet up, and turn on mud wrestling. I'm not sure. But whatever, then when they relaxed, it got in. Maybe they didn't kick the dog that night. I don't know. But it's a way to send blessings to people very easily. You have to try it in your own experience. Test it out. It's a simple process. Nothing mystical about it. Well, maybe it is mystical, but it's also very simple. Put your attention in your heart. You can also connect your heart to touch. Touch is such a primal human need. We've all heard the studies that little animals die when they're not touched at all by mothers. Even if they have a rag doll mother, they gravitate. But if not touched, they wither. They die to what they are. Babies get depressed if they're not touched. One study I often quote from a library. It was done in a library, a big city library where people didn't really know the librarian that well, who came through. And they trained the librarians to check out for several hours, to check everyone out exactly the same way if possible. They would use the same tone of voice. They'd be as consistent as possible. Take their books, give them their card, and so on and so forth. Everybody the same, except every other person they touched. They didn't like stroke their cheek. They may have just touched their hand as they were giving them back their library card. Then someone pretended they were interviewing, doing a survey of the libraries. As they went out the door, they had a code. And they said, excuse me, we were wondering, could you describe the librarian? And how did you feel about that? What kind of a person was a librarian? Then, well, the people who were not touched not only couldn't describe the librarian well, but they hardly remembered their gender. They reported the librarian to be somewhat aloof and cold or distant. The people who were touched, they could describe the librarian in fairly good detail, and they reported them as warm, caring people. All that from the touch. But the most interesting part of the study is that when they said, by the way, did the librarian touch you? Most of the people who were touched didn't even know. They said, no, I wasn't. It wasn't even conscious. All at basic self, subconscious level. That's how important touch is. Often we shake hands with someone. We may touch an arm. Safe social touches. Not even a hug. When you connect your attention, put your attention in your heart while you're touching someone, it magnifies the effect tremendously. You're connecting your heart to your touch. It becomes much more powerful. Like working with kids, working with teenagers. Can you imagine speaking from your heart? Even if you have to bring in some tough love, you speak from your heart and touch once in a while. I know today it's very tricky if you touch a child, but just touch their arm or something as you're speaking. It can make a big difference. They don't even know why. They just like you. They're more open to you. You're a nice person. And you change in the process. Now you can connect your heart to your eyes as well. You don't project anything out of your eyes. You actually, most of us, when we look at somebody in the eyes, there's this invisible screen we put up. It's kind of like a hard screen, like snakes have these invisible eyelid things. But instead, you feel your heart as you make eye contact. It doesn't have to be a long, it's not one of these 1960s love stares. No, just a glance, but you feel your heart at the same time. You let them see the love you have for them as a human being. Again, it's not flirting. It's very simple. You just feel your heart as you make eye contact. You connect your heart with your eyes. You can also even connect a heart to your hearing. When someone's telling you something, we rarely remember our heart while we're listening. We're usually thinking of what we're going to say next, maybe to help them or give advice or respond. But instead, if we just listen to every word, the tone, the sound, and connect it to our heart, our higher selves are in touch. They may come up with a solution you might have suggested. Just listening can be very powerful. A Buddhist proverb says, by listening deeply, you alleviate pain and suffering. Just by listening. Just by listening. Seneca, ancient Greek philosopher, wrote, educating the mind without educating the heart is no education at all. Ursula K. Le Guin, the writer, said, love doesn't just sit like a stone. It has to be made and remade all the time like bread made anew. What about that? What about that? Remember feelings fade? Love fades over time. It's not enough to say, we've been together a long time. Of course I love my wife. Of course I love my husband. Love fades. The feeling fades. Many of us in our marriage say, something's wrong. I don't have that loving feeling anymore. Well then, re-stimulate it. How do you do that? I asked my parents. They were married, as I said, 63 years. Around their 50th anniversary, I said, how did you manage to live with each other this long? Because I knew them, like few other people. And they weren't all that easy. Nobody's that easy to live with. A couple of the main things I can touch upon here. Some things you can do. Touch your loved ones. Okay, so if you're married, how many times have you touched your spouse? Not counting sex. Not counting sex. How many times have you touched your spouse in the last couple of days? I hope it'll shock you if you haven't at all. Touch every day. A 1 minute massage can be wonderful. A gentle massage. 1 minute massage. You know, we have a minute to watch TV. We have a minute to read books. We have a minute to do lots of things. You can take a minute to give a 1 minute massage. Unless they really don't want you to. On special occasions, do you do something special? Do you go out of your way, even if you're really busy? Do you get out of the house with your partner or spouse? Sometimes if things are really deadly, you know, because the house is associated, it's maybe a nice house, but it's still where you take out the trash, pay the bills, etc. Just stepping outside of the environment where you deal with the mundane things of everyday life, which seem mundane anyway, and you walk around the block. Walking the dog has saved some marriages. You start talking, you're outside together, it's a different environment. So changing your environment, getting out of the house. Once a week or once a month, make sure you go out, no matter how busy you are. You know, it's funny, every time my wife and I go out, we don't go too often, but every time we do, it's like getting a massage or having sex. We go, you know, we should do this more often. Give praise. How many times have you given praise to your spouse or partner the last couple days? Acknowledge anything. That's not the same as saying thanks. That comes next. Say many thank yous. But praise. You do this well. You look this way. You look nice. I like the way you did this. You know, you're really wise. You help me a lot. Whatever. Give praise. Use I words when you're having, especially when you're having a disagreement. Use I words. I feel this. This affects me in this way. When this happens, I, rather than you're doing it again. Notice whether you go you, or I. It's one of the safe times and good times to use the word I. Say I'm sorry. Well, even when you don't think you've really messed up, you can be sorry that they're upset. Say thank you and I'm sorry more. These are a few ways, but there are many others. Mohandas Gandhi said, peace between countries is founded on love between individuals. St. Augustine wrote, one loving spirit sets another on fire. Harriet Ward Beecher wrote, I never knew how to worship until I knew how to love. I never knew how to worship until I knew how to love. Now comes the most important part. If I'd skipped everything I've said about awakening the heart, I only need to tell you the next thing. This is a radical approach to awakening the heart. What makes it unique? Because you've heard things like what I said before. It's a nice reminder. But I suggest you do not have to feel love at all. You don't have to feel loving. You don't have to go around doing any techniques of putting your attention in your heart or visualizing your heart. The full and most mature form of human loving is acting with loving kindness, whether you feel loving or not. That takes spirit and courage. Remember I mentioned to you that it's the lady's job to improve us, gentlemen? Well, when my wife is busy improving me, sometimes giving me a needed critique at a high decibel level, when she is in my face, it's very difficult for me to somehow generate loving feelings. And I have no control over that anyway, whether I happen to feel loving. What is natural to come up in those moments is fear, anger, resentment, petulance, self-pity. Shall I go on? But even while I'm feeling all those things and she's yada yada, you know, I can treat her with loving kindness. It's not easy. Sometimes I fail. I'm not up to the job, but sometimes I am. And when I am, I will listen. And when she's done and I really feel she's had a chance to say everything she said, I may say, wow, I really messed up this time. Would you like to add anything? Wouldn't that be refreshing, ladies, for a change, huh? Sometimes it's easy to act with loving kindness, and sometimes it's not. But it is the true step toward everyday enlightenment and awakening the heart. That's why they were saints. Not because they felt love all the time, because that's not something that's natural. Feelings come and go all the time. But they could focus on what they can control, how they behave. You may say, that's false. That's not being true to yourself. You have to be true to your feelings. You need to act congruently with your feelings. Well, acting congruently with your feelings is letting your feelings drive and determine your behavior. But someone I couldn't get through to you. They said, no, no, that's not. When you're upset, you need to let it be known. You can't act kind. That's being hypocritical, smiling and acting kindly. I said, oh, you're right. If I'm ever feeling murderous, I definitely should go murder somebody. Or if I'm really sad and a child walks by and needs his or her shoelaces tied, I'll say, I can't tie your shoelaces. I have to express my sorrow to you. Consider it. Now, the tricky part, it sounds so easy, just act with kindness. But we don't always know what it is to act with kindness, do we? If someone around you is very upset, and you remain aloof and say, oh, I'm sorry to hear you're upset, that may not be so kind. That may make them a little crazy. So, only in our wisdom and being in touch with that person, trusting our intuition, finding our compassion, maybe just sitting and listening and saying nothing, can be the most kind thing we can do. So it takes skill and maturity to finally develop the knowledge how to be kind. Not forcing some little old lady across the street. You may not want to go. Aldous Huxley wrote Brave New World, The Doors of Perception. Brilliant writer. Came from a brilliant family. He, among few Westerners of his time, practiced a global heritage of spiritual traditions. He didn't just philosophize about it. He went to this country and practiced. He went to that country and he practiced their disciplines. Shamanistic practices, Buddhist practices, Christian practices, Jewish practices. And when he was near death, one of the students came to him and said, after all this, what have you learned? And he said, it's a bit embarrassing to have studied the human problem all one's life and find at the end that one has no more to offer than try to be a little kinder. Maybe it comes down to that. Perhaps that's why Martin Luther said, love and do what you will. That can be interpreted many different ways. But in a sense, when you come from a place of love and kindness, and you're able to do that, it doesn't matter what you do. Because it's going to be coming from a place of compassion. Love is an action, not a word. Words are cheap. You can say, I love you all the time, but how are you acting? How are you behaving? Little things count. Little things count. And in fact, that serves as a wonderful segue into the 12th and final gateway, serve your world. But before we go there, I'd like to draw upon one other point. Love begins at home. It is very difficult to fully let your love expand into the world for others until you learn to love yourself. And of course, I don't mean in some narcissistic way or self-centered or anything like that. Number one first, you know, look out for number one. I'm talking about loving yourself as a human being and honoring yourself as an individual human life, living it as only you can live it, expressing it as only you can express it, as no one else ever will. That can be the biggest challenge. In one of my books, The Laws of Spirit, under the law of compassion, I have a quotation you might enjoy by Carl Jung, that I feed the hungry, forgive an insult, and love my enemy. These are great virtues. But what if I should discover that the poorest of the beggars and most impudent of offenders are all within me, and that I stand in need of the alms of my own kindness, that I myself am the enemy who must be loved? What then? So when you're going around loving, don't forget yourself. The 12th gateway, serve your world. Service is an attitude and action founded on the recognition that the world has supported you, fed you, taught you, and tested you, whether or not you earned it. Understanding this simple truth can move you to do what you can to repay a boundless debt of gratitude. Service is both a means and an end. For in giving to others, you open yourself to love, abundance, and inner peace. You cannot serve others without uplifting yourself. Now we turn to the 12th and final gateway, serve your world. Now, if you're like me, you may go, well, that's fine, it's the 12th gateway, but it doesn't seem as exciting somehow as embrace your sexuality or manage your money. I can really see what's in it for me. But serve your world, doesn't that bring up, oh yeah, I know, it would be good to go volunteer someplace, even though I'm busy, I know, yes, I should serve my world more. It brings up these subtle guilts in many of us. Well, I hope to assuage some of those guilts, though guilt can be very healthy. I think we should have more guilt, actually. You know, one man came up to me once and said, Dan, maybe you can help me. I'm feeling really a lot of guilt I'm dealing with, you know, about visiting my mother more often at the nursing home. And I said, can't help you about the guilt. Why don't you go visit your mother more? Maybe guilts are good sometimes. In any case, there's more to serving your world, though, than going to volunteer someplace. Before we get into it, let me read you a few questions to help assess your relationship to service. When you hear or read the phrase, serve your world, what are the first words that come to mind? Say them to yourself quickly now. What words come? Serve your world. Do you do any volunteer work? Why or why not? Beyond services you normally provide at work or at home, think of three acts of service, large or small, you've provided in the past 24 hours. Even small acts of service. Even if you remember one, how did it feel? If you were independently wealthy, how would you spend your time? How would you spend your money? Do you help others when it is convenient? Do you help others when it is inconvenient? When you do someone a favor, do you expect thanks? Is it possible you should be the one thanking them? Name your three best accomplishments. In fact, take a moment to actually do that. Think about the three things you're most proud of that you've ever achieved in your life. Three things. Now, from the three things, pick one of them, the one you're most proud of. And now, see if you can think of or name, you may not do it right now, but when you have a pencil and paper handy in the time, write down, take a few minutes and write down at least 10 people whose skills or services helped you to accomplish that. If you're stuck, you might start with your parents who gave you birth. There's a hint here. There are many more than 10. Many more than 10. I've never written a book by myself. I have computer programmers helping me, people who design hardware and keyboards, people who design the chair that I sit on, the electric company that kindly allows the electricity to flow through so my computer works, the editors, the typesetters. I could name 100 people who helped me write books easily. We never accomplish anything on our own. Nothing. What form of service, whether paid or unpaid, would you most like to provide in the world? Think about this. I'll repeat it. What form of service, whether paid or unpaid, would you most like to provide in the world? If you could. And what have you done or might you do to set this in motion? Never forget, first of all, that your work is a form of service, whether or not you get paid for it. Just because you get paid doesn't eliminate it from the list of services. Whether you put screws in a card on an assembly line or type memos at work, that is a form of service. It makes a difference for people. If you weren't doing it, it wouldn't get done, or someone else would have to do it. So we're all providing services for others. Service is not then just volunteer work. In fact, money can be a form of service. I can go and work with Habitat for Humanity, a wonderful organization that builds houses for people. Everyone gathers together and they have to own the land and the materials, and people put up houses for them. It's a wonderful idea. They build thousands, tens of thousands of houses around the world now. But you know what? I can either go do it myself, which is very satisfying, or I can donate money to Habitat to allow other people to do it. So money can be a form of service. Ted Turner, $1 billion to the UN? Or if someone gives $5, if that's what they can afford. Money is a form of service. Donating makes a big difference. Every organization, they're volunteer organizations, but you ask them, call them up someday and say, does it matter to you that we give a little money? Makes a huge service. So if you did nothing else but donate to different causes, it's a form of service. You know, I receive a great deal of advice from people in the mail or email or telephone. They leave messages. They say, Dan, I love your work. You'd be so good working with teens. You could teach your knife fighting training to youth at risk. They'd find it appealing. It'd be good for them because it's really a personal growth training. Or somebody else said, you know, you really could make a difference in the prisons. These guys are wondering about their life. It's a captive audience. But so you could make a real difference. You ought to be working in the prisons. Some other people say, Dan, you know, the homeless, they need meaning. They're lost. They have no purpose. You could really make a difference for them, and so on. And yet I tell them, I have worked in the prisons. I've been to prison several times. The prison chaplain invited me and spoken with people there, given some books out. I have worked with young people who've come to some of my trainings. I have worked with a homeless chaplain in our area and met with some people. But it's not my calling. There are people whose calling is to work in the prisons or to work with the homeless. That's where they should go. Each of us has to find our calling. You don't just go because, oh yeah, it's good to volunteer. So you can explore to find your calling. For example, some ways you can volunteer. You can work with the environment somehow. Find an environmental organization. Work with the elderly. My father's in a retirement home in the Los Angeles area. They love visitors. They do magic or sing songs or anything. Work with youth. Big brother, big sister makes a huge difference to somebody. Suicide prevention, hotline. Doing sandwiches for the homeless. Some of us are stopped because we go, but I just can't, you know, I'm not ready to commit 2 days a week for 6 months or a year. You don't have to. Remember our secret? A little bit of something is better than a lot of nothing. If you went down to a place where they're making sandwiches for the homeless, they have one near my house, I've done that. You can drop in and say, look, I can only be here for half an hour or 20 minutes. But can I help a little bit? And they go, oh, sure, grab those, bring them over. You helped and you left. And maybe next time you'll feel like coming back and doing more. Work in your children's schools. I know of parents, very socially conscious parents in Marin County where I live, who are off volunteering all over the place. Meanwhile, their kids are home alone. This makes no sense to me. When you have young children, your major form of service and your major charity are your children. That's why the souls were given into your care. So that's your first priority as a form of service. And it is, whether it's your job, quote unquote, as a parent or not, it's a form of service. Of course, working in a hospice, it takes some training, but that is sacred work. Not altogether pleasant. People aren't always at their best when they're dying, to put it mildly. But it's a blessing to see life pass. When it does, at times, not always, but at times, you feel angels in the room. It's like when you're in a room when a baby is born. When someone passes out of this world, it's like passing into it. It's quite an auspicious time. And to be holding somebody's hand, it's very special. And you'll grow to value more and more human life. This is a true story. I'm not exaggerating to make any point. This happened just the way I'm relating it. About a couple of years ago when I had a full-time assistant, a man named Brad called up. And he said, I just wanted you to know something. He told my assistant this, and she conveyed it to me. He said, about 8 years ago, no, it wasn't 8 years ago, it was about 3 years before, he had called, and I wasn't too busy, and apparently I had time. I spoke with him, and he was relating problems with his lady friend, and with his job, and he didn't know what his life was about, and he was relating all this to me. And apparently, I don't remember the conversation, but apparently I suggested that he go volunteer someplace, find someplace to volunteer. Well, we ended the conversation. He reminded me of this because I didn't remember it took place. But when he called up the second time, he called up to let my secretary know it had changed his life. He said, when I spoke with Dan, I was really angry at him. He said, I didn't understand it, but I was so ticked at him. He didn't use the word ticked. He said, but I felt he was blowing me off, just brushing me off. I was telling him how I was hurting and this was going on. And all Millman says to me is, go volunteer someplace. Like, be a do-gooder, you know. And he said, I didn't think Dan was listening to me. And so he was angry and upset and disappointed me when he hung up. He said, for some odd reason, about 5 to 6 months after that, he found himself volunteering in an organization, working with the poor. And he said that changed his entire life. He had no idea it would have this impact. No concept of it. Suddenly his relationships got better. His financial situation got better. Everything started changing for him. Pretty dramatic. Now, I suspect what happened was, and why we come full circle from self-worth, the first gateway to the 12th, serve your world, is providing service for other people. His self-worth went up and he began to just kind of open up to life more. He felt he was kind of a better guy. It may not work like a formula like this, but in his case, that's what happened. He was angry at me, but he found himself doing it anyway. It changed his life, volunteering. Because we remember why we're here on the planet. George Bernard Shaw wrote, "My life belongs to the whole community, and I want to be thoroughly used up when I die. For the harder I work, the more I live." Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "One of life's most beautiful compensations, no one can sincerely try to help another without helping themselves." Marie Sendak wrote, "There must be more to life than having everything." Mark Twain reminds us that kindness is a language the deaf can hear and the blind can see. Arthur Ashe, "From what we get, we make a living. From what we give, we make a life." Speaking of money as service, an Arab proverb goes like this: "If you have much, give of your wealth. If you have little, give of your heart." Now that I've made a pitch for volunteering and formal forms of service, let's go into the everyday form of service we all can provide. When I drove to the airport to fly here and make this tape program, as I always do, I pass over the Golden Gate Bridge. It's a $3 toll. Whenever I go over the bridge, I pay my toll and I pay the toll for the person behind me. Now that's fun to do. I've been in a taxi cab or a limo, and I also say, hey, let's pay the toll for the person behind us. We drive off, I don't often look back at all. But I have some sense somebody is going to go, whoa, what? The first time I ever did it, I looked back in the rearview mirror as I pulled away, and the person was sticking their head out the window going, hey. They may go home that night, and somebody says, how was your day? And they go, oh, you know, just same old day. Oh, yeah. A stranger paid my toll, and I was tailgating the guy. Maybe strangers aren't so bad. Maybe that person will pay somebody else's toll, just for fun. Those are little things we can all do. There are things that are really big in the eyes of the world that are not very big in the eyes of spirit. There are also things that are little in the eyes of the world, little things that are very big in the eyes of spirit. Writing a note for a waiter or a waitress. If you've ever been a waiter or a waitress, you would know the impact of someone writing a note, leaving a big tip just to get your attention for the note, and then writing something. This happened to me a long time ago. I mean, I write notes now and then, not every time. It's not a formula. But this person was just knocking herself out. It was a busy night. One of the waiters was sick. One of the cooks was sick. And everybody was rushed and grumpy and took a long time to get the food. She brought the wrong thing. She apologized, came back, brought the right thing. But I wrote a note, left a big tip, and wrote a note. Obviously, it was a tough night tonight, but you were really knocking yourself out, going 100%. We really appreciated it. You helped make our meal a pleasure. If you've ever been a waiter or waitress, you would know what that would do on a tough night. I once wrote a note to somebody, and I don't wait around to see the response. But this time, I was slow getting out. She came up to me with tears in her eyes, said she was thinking of quitting. And this kept her there longer. That didn't happen. So those little things can make a big difference. Putting a coin in somebody's meter that's expired. That could be you next time, you know? Picking up litter. There's no city. I've been into about 30 cities this year so far. Maybe 35 cities. And there's not a single city I visit that I don't pick up litter. If I see some litter on the ground, I just pick it up and put it in a can. I don't do it compulsively. I'm not trying to clean the whole... I'm not Mr. Clean, you know? But once in a while, I see some litter, I pick it up. Somebody may see me do that. You see, we have the power to uplift the standards around us or lower them. People are watching us like hawks, especially our kids. And just by doing something like that, you know, picking it up, putting it in the trash, somebody else might see that and say, wow, that guy didn't drop that litter. He just picked it up. Maybe I'll do that sometime. I can't know the impact of my words on an audio tape or to an audience. But I do know that every city I leave it a little cleaner. I at least know that. Making some food sometimes, buying a couple extra sandwiches at the store, whatever, going down and you see a hungry person, give them a sandwich. Occasionally, they'll go, I don't want a sandwich. Give me some money. I want to go buy something else. But often, it's a very nice thing to do, just to give somebody some food. I've done that. I've gone into a store to get a couple things for myself, and I walk out, and I see somebody, oh, here, as I walk out. You know, it's those little things that make a difference. Pay extra. When someone provides a service, plumber comes to your house, or gardener, whoever. Pay them more than they asked for. The shock value is worth it. People like to follow me in airplane bathrooms, not immediately, but after I come out, because it's cleaner than when I arrive, when I leave. Little things like that make somebody's quality of life a little better when they come in. Instead of finding a mess, it's cleaned up. When you buy tickets to a show, a concert, a movie, buy an extra ticket. Just give it to somebody. Practice the spiritual senses, speaking from your heart. Cost nothing. Blessing people costs nothing. Buy gift certificates on occasion to a store, a movie. Give it to somebody, a friend or a stranger. Whenever I stay in a hotel, the people who clean the rooms fight it out to get to my room after I leave. Because there's always a note and a good tip. These are little things that make a big difference, and that's a form of service as well. Even a kind word or a smile. Taking the time every day, when I see strangers in the street, I'm always going, "Hi, how you doing? Have a good day." When I drive out of a parking lot at the airport, you know, I give them the receipt, they tell me how much money it is, I give it to them. But I always go, "Hey, have a great day. It's a nice shirt you're wearing." Whatever. Have a kind word for people. You know, many of us treat people behind the supermarket counter or at the laundromat or the laundry, dry cleaners, whatever. They're like part of the fixtures. They're just there to give us our clothes and we give them our money. No, they're a real person there. Maybe they have kids, you know, relatives that have needs like we do. So to me, what's as important as getting my clothes or buying my groceries is leaving them a little feeling better than when I came. Makes a big difference. And in fact, it can save a life. And this happened to me. A woman told me this. Again, it happened to be Los Angeles, not the same woman I mentioned before. Her name was Cheryl. She was very shy and very quiet. She came up to me at a book signing and said, "I have to tell you a story." By the way, it had nothing to do with, for a change, with my books or something I had said. She just wanted me to hear the story. She had tried to commit suicide twice, made half-hearted attempts. But she was suicidal, very depressed. And she really didn't believe anybody in the world could care less whether she lived or died. And she had decided to go home and kill herself. She was on the way home when a nice-looking man was walking on the sidewalk going in the other direction. And they just for a moment made eye contact. She glanced at him and he looked at her and he gave her a big smile and said, "Hi." That smile was just enough to get her home. And she said, "You know what? I don't feel like killing myself right now." It got her through the day. And the next day, she decided to get some help. She's still around, obviously. She told me the story. You never know. Some people have too much a sense of self-importance, but most of us don't have enough self-importance. We don't realize the impact we have on the people around us. We're all teachers here. I play the role up here on the stage. We are all teachers. We teach by example. Albert Schweitzer said, "In influencing others, example is not the main thing. It's the only thing." And so never underestimate the power of a kind word from you to someone else. You never know the impact it's going to have. You know, I've spoken a lot with audiences and groups of people, written books, and people come up to me, they said, "You know, this one thing you said," and I never had any idea it would have that impact. So if you do nothing but just say some kind words and smile at people. You know, if somebody doesn't have a smile, give them one of your own. You know the saying? It can make a huge difference in serving your world. Helen Keller said, "I am only one, still I am one. I cannot do everything, still I can do something." Mother Teresa, "We cannot all do great things, but we can do small things with great love." And finally, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "To leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition, to know that even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have succeeded." With that, I end the 12th gateway. What I'd like to do now is to summarize the 12 gateways to you, kind of to plant these seeds, discover your worth. You are no more or less worthy than any other person or part of reality. Your sense of worth grows by doing what is worthy. But you do not have to feel worthy. You only have to apply your will to treat yourself as you would a loved one or an honored guest, ending self-destructive behaviors or cycles of self-sabotage, opening to life's opportunities. Reclaim your will When motivation lags, your willpower takes over. You will use your will when you stop waiting to feel motivated. Life has always come down to this. The ripest fruit grows on the highest limbs of the tree of life. To pick the fruit, you make the climb step by step, day by day. Energize your body. Your body is all you have for a lifetime. Attend to the Holy Trinity of health, light diet, regular exercise, and rest, relaxation. Full breathing, and you will maximize your genetic potential, finding greater health, vitality, and energy for life's many facets and adventures. Manage your money. First, rise above limiting programs and beliefs about money. Value and use money wisely as you would any other form of energy. Stretch your limits and abilities and your talents to produce stable, sufficient, even abundant income. And spend and give and save. Tame your mind. Remember that the world is not what you think. Look beyond your filters to grasp the world as it is, in its moment-to-moment simplicity. Let thoughts be, but focus your attention on the matter at hand in this moment, and you will find greater inner peace and illumination. Trust your intuition. You know and can access far more than you have read or studied or been told. Trust this deeply rooted ancient human capacity. Become whole by using, respecting, and trusting both sides of your brain, but not at the same time. Listen to your mind, but trust your heart. Accept your emotions. Life without emotions would be as calm as death, like a world without weather. Accept feelings as they are, pleasant or painful. They are natural and don't need fixing. Let them rise and pass without allowing changeable emotions to run your life. Face your fears. Fear is a chameleon that can be a wise guide in one moment and a terrible tyrant the next. Respect fear, but never let it be your master. If physical danger is involved, listen well. If psychological danger rises in the path, then do what you most fear and become a peaceful warrior. Illuminate your shadow. You have to deal with the darkness before you can see your light. The image you present to the world is but the visible tip of the iceberg. Embrace all your opposites. Redeem your dark possibilities so that you consciously live in the light, finding wholeness, authenticity, and compassion. Embrace your sexuality. Your approach to sexuality mirrors your relationship to life. Sexual enlightenment transcends both self-denial and self-indulgence to find a full and balanced expression of sexual creative energy, forming an intimate bond between you, your partner, and spirit. Awaken your heart. As you have seen, the emotion of love comes and goes like waves. Enduring love of the awakening heart is not a feeling, but an action. Combining love and will, you walk the same path as the saints by showing loving kindness to all other beings, whether or not you feel like it. And finally, serve your world. When you've seen what there is to see, when life has revealed you to yourself, as you are, your search becomes how to best serve. Life itself, your work, family, and every interaction is a chance to serve, to connect, to find meaning in the moment, and purpose in the play. Thank you very much for coming.